How does one going about getting a dead gopher and staying that into the arena?
Well, they don't pat you down at the Ralph, so...
Yeah, but still, the smell should give you away.
Nah, if you keep it in, like, a plastic bag inside a plastic bag inside a garbage bag.
Yes.
Like, think octopus, I guess.
Yeah, but the octopus you can put down your...
They said the gophers were frozen, though.
That's weird. I guess easier to clean up for the crew. I mean, good for them.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Soderstrom bubble.
I think it'd be hard to fling, like, a...
I think you could get more distance on it.
More distance on a frozen one?
No, on a non-frozen one.
Oh, see, I was thinking it'd be harder to throw an unfrozen one because it'd be like all floppy dead, you know?
If you want more courage on the ice, like if you want carnage on the ice, then yeah, you can flop and then it flops over end.
Sure.
I'm Scotty Waz. That's Jen, the NHL History Girl. We're talking about what we saw this weekend, and it kind of partails us into our UND update as UND split with Minnesota in the... blood feud to end all blood feuds, apparently. It was an interesting, my first, like, in taking it in personally.
Mm-hmm.
With the Friday night, much more hype than the Saturday night game.
Yeah.
A lot more energy in the building Friday night. And then, yeah, Saturday night, it didn't yield too much, except for a shutout win. So.
I think they weren't expecting as much because Friday night's game did not go as planned for
UND. Friday night's game was really sloppy for UND.
Yeah.
For both teams, actually, in all honesty.
Yeah.
But
it's like they were overamped.
Yeah, they got caught up to it. They played well. Yeah. But I think a lot of guys are trying to do a little too much now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see a lot of guys who are struggling and they're doing too much. That after last year where they played well, now they're just, the slump's there.
Mm-hmm.
The slump is real.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're going to talk about two of the things that we saw this weekend. One about being thrown on ice.
Mm-hmm.
And then rivalry games. Sometimes they go hand in hand as well.
yep.
But yeah, the UND this weekend splits, lost 2-1 Friday night, 1-4 Cobb on Saturday night. First time 6 years
mm-hmm.
this has been played in Grand Forks. They started up the rivalry series again last year after a 5-year hiatus since they've moved out of conferences.
Yes.
So.
Oh, they used to have a trophy in football?
Mm-hmm.
When they played, it's called the Nickel Trophy. And so they play each other in football for, I don't know if
it's had to be years ago, too, because Minnesota went to Big Ten and became somewhat of a football school.
Yeah, but I think it was a thing that they did as like a friendly game or an exhibition game. I'm not entirely sure because I'm not a football fan. Like, disclaimer.
Well, even still, like the mismatch between the two. Like even
oh,
an
no,
exhibition
wait.
Game.
Never mind. This is an NDSU thing. Not an M. Not a U of M. Yeah.
Oh.
No. I was thinking Moorhead, not Minnesota. Sorry.
Well, Moorhead's in Minnesota, so yeah. I can understand where. But still, like you have these rivalry trophies and stuff like that. In football, there's some of that in hockey, but not as much, and in college hockey. But before we get to college hockey, because that's a whole different animal unto itself, the NHL rivalries.
Yeah.
Obviously, the rivalries go on, and you can't get away from them these days because NBC has to have...
Forces them,
and they have a whole night for it.
Yeah.
Wednesday night rivalry night.
It's not the smartest.
Marketing, no. Well, it also puts you into a box because there's only so many teams that play on a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the rivalry between the Colorado Avalanche and the Florida Panthers. Well, you okay? Sure, but you're 90, like 20 years too late, but okay.
Sure, yeah, and even then, it's like these teams rarely played.
Yeah.
Like, and it's funny because they try to shove the Red Wings in with like old Western Conference, Norris Division rivals, and it's not as fun anymore.
Mm-mm.
It's not as there anymore. But, you know.
You also don't have the player characters that you had back then either that were sort of triggering these rivalries, like the Claude Lemieux and the Patrick Waugh and the Billy Smiths and the Tiger Williams and the, you know, like...
Yeah, the Derek Sandersons and the Maurice Richards and, you know, all these other guys who actually had some character and some had some tenacity before it became... I guess you can call it a corporate rivalries now.
Yeah.
Because it seems that, you know, it's more about the payola there.
Yeah.
Especially when you get to Colorado, because in the 90s and then even the early 2000s, Colorado was a hotbed for a rivalry team. I mean, you had the Red Wings to an extent. You had the Wild, the Kings. I mean, they're you know, the Stars especially, Dallas and Colorado, those series and those matchups were pretty big. But, boy, howdy, did those Those fizzle out after everything got realigned and Colorado got terrible, as they have a paper management group right there. What is the one true rivalry for you when it comes to hockey? When you think of hockey overall, is it Montreal-Boston? Is it Montreal-Toronto?
Historically, it's Montreal-Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, that's the epic rivalry. Like, there were a couple of Leafs players back in the, you know, original six era who said, you know, we're happy to play hockey. We're happy to earn a living from it. But we'd play Montreal for free, you know, and vice versa. Like that.
And Harold Ballard's like, well, I can help with that, boys.
I mean, the implication being, you know, this is our job, but this is the one game we'd play for free, you know, just to go beat them up, you know.
Sure, and I mean, back in those days, it was more about. It was pride.
It was pride, and there were team rules and codes of conduct where, you know, if you were friends with Dick Duff and you were on the Toronto Maple Leafs, so you got traded to the Red Wings, the next time the Red Wings came to town, you two didn't go out to dinner like you would now. You know, you didn't go out to dinner, you didn't socialize when you came to town, really.
It was wrestling.
Basically,
it was wrestling in the kayfabe era back in the 70s and 80s.
I mean, it was so bad that if you had teams traveling on the same train, you had to separate them by several cars and schedule their meal times at separate times so they would not bump into each other in the main dining car and cause a problem, because that happened a couple of times where a couple of players ran into each other, words were exchanged, shoves were exchanged. You're on a train. It's a small space. There's actual China on the train, you know. Bad things are going to happen. So, I mean, it was... There were players who were known to get up in the middle of a meal and just leave, you know, the money on the table and walk out the restaurant if another team happened to walk in while they were eating. I mean, it was quite serious for some teams and some players. And there was... Eddie Shore actually punched out one of his teammates.
Wow.
Yeah, for... fraternizing with the or socializing with the enemy, I guess.
Fair enough. I mean, that's
And he's not the only one who did it.
No,
but I mean, there were guys who took it very, very seriously.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, when it comes to your livelihood, and is that era where guys could take your jobs very easily, or you can get, and if ownership being as stingy as it is, if they saw you out with somebody,
they were like, "All right, you're off the team.
You're being disloyal to our team. How dare you?"
Yeah.
See you later. We're gonna send you. We're gonna trade you away. We're gonna release you. We're gonna send you down to Muskegon or some.
We're gonna send you to Eddie Shore.
Exactly. So enjoy what the hell that is. So Montreal, Toronto, Montreal, Boston, two big ones. Chicago, Detroit, I would say a bigger one.
Yeah, that was a big one.
I don't believe in Toronto, Boston. I don't believe in Boston, Chicago. I don't believe Boston, Detroit.
Nope.
Quebec and Montreal.
That's
obviously
a big one.
That's a huge one.
That one's also very political. And that one actually has its roots way, way, way back when they started the league, and they had the Habs, and then they had the Wanderers, and then the Maroons. And that was because they wanted separate teams for the French Canadians, the French speaking Canadians, to cheer for than the Anglo speaking. So there was that French Anglo rivalry, even at the beginning of the league, that they were trying to. The problem was it didn't work because the Wanderers played their first game and got 700 fans despite offering free tickets to soldiers. I mean.
Well, that's also kind of you impede on someone's turf as well. Like, that's like. We're gonna. It's the whole idea of any second Toronto team being as popular as the Maple Leafs.
Well, sure, and the Maroons had quite a following in their day. They were fairly successful. They won a cup, but it was pretty clear that they meant to separate the fandoms. The French fans go over here, and you root for the Habs because that's where all the French speaking players went, you know.
Sure.
And then you Anglo fans, you cheer over here for the Maroons, and that was that, you know. And
yeah, it just didn't gel. Yeah. At least with that one, was it Montreal being the more Anglo centric than, because Quebec City seems like a place would be all French all the time.
Yeah, no, Quebec City is notoriously hardcore for enforcing the French first laws. And if you don't know what the French first laws are, there are laws in Quebec that say any signage, any newspapers, any street signs, whatever, like literally anything that's written down, has to be printed in French first and then English. And there are even arguments over which English words are acceptable in the French portions of the newspaper or the signs or the government or whatever printings that you're talking about. So, I mean, they're very stringent on these laws. Montreal is less so, but they're still crazy stringent. I mean, there's an argument over the word pasta not very long ago.
Pasta.
Mm-hmm. As an acceptable word in the French, like a French restaurant ad. So, yeah, like, is that an acceptable word to use? And I mean, it's crazy. So
why don't they just get on board with the rest of the damn country? Like, Jesus Christ. It's not like up in Nunavut where they have actual native languages that are dying and I can understand them. Then they, listen, French is spoken elsewhere. Get on board with the rest of Canada. Like, you're not that special. Well, you're white like everyone else.
The problem is that they have a very distinct heritage, and they have a very distinct, I don't want to say dialect of French, because it's, well, actually it is a dialect, because it's like Canadian standard French is not the same as France's version of standard, standardized French is not the same as the Swiss standardized version of French is not, you know, they're all distinct. So, so Quebec, it's very political. It's very socio-political. There was a lot of I don't want to say racism, because they're not, I mean, Quebecois is not a race, but it is an ethnic group.
Would it be at that point?
Xenophobic, yeah. I guess. Because they're very much a socio-cultural group, but they're not a, like, an actual race.
And,
but
yeah, and those games were brawls too.
Yeah, those games were insane. That's why they have names like the Good Friday Massacre and, you know, these sort of things. So the Quebec rivalry is very much sociopolitically driven, in a sense.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Battle of Alberta, which is I've experienced many times living up there in the lean years.
in the low quality.
You hear a lot, you know, listen, Rem Murray against Craig Conroy, not as big of a draw for most people. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a feud that still goes on. That transcends hockey.
Oh, absolutely.
That's football. That's politics. Yeah, yeah. That's country stars. That's concerts.
Yeah.
Because the Saddle Dome is such a god horrible place for acoustics that all the concerts go up to Edmonton. So it's that's a big one. A lot of geographical, obviously. Yeah,
obviously, the Islanders and the Rangers.
Islanders-Rangers is an interesting one to me.
Yeah.
Because Rangers fans talk so much garbage. And yet the Islanders had that dynasty there, and they still treat it. It's like, you guys have won one cup in the time it's taken the Islanders to win four. So I don't, you know, I understand you're the old boys in town, but you ain't so shiny either.
Yeah. That one's very geographical, very socio-geographical, actually. Because when the Islanders got their own team and then won the cups, there's actually an article, I think, in Newsday where they interviewed fans, and fans were like, yeah, you know what? New York always looks down on Long Island as this terrible, like, country bumpkin almost type place to live. Like, if you live on Long Island, you're not part of New York. You don't belong to New York. We don't want you in New York. We're, you know. And so these fans were just thrilled to finally have something that was their own, you know, their own NHL team, their own identity that put them in a positive light. And they were really excited about that. And then, of course, you have the Denny Potvin, Ulf
Samuelson.
I always want to say Nielsen. No, I'm like, no, it's not.
That happened when he was with Rangers. That happened when he was with the Penguins.
No, it was with the Rangers. Mm. He broke his leg.
Yeah, Potvin did that to Ben Gustin, too.
Yeah. Although the funny thing is, he and Ulf, Potvin and Ulf are friends, and they like to go skeet shooting together, which is the most random thing I know about that. But fans still chant it to this day. Although I've had fans ask me, like, why are they chanting this? I go to the game, why are they chanting this? And I'm like, okay, well, you know, here's the clip. here's the story. Enjoy. You know, join in if you want, I guess. I mean, but...
And that's the thing where it's just like you ask me like whether we kind of ponder ourselves, when are people going to stop yelling "Fighting Sioux" at the games? I'm like, it's never going to happen.
No,
it's, you're always going to have the lineage passed down, because let's be honest, people here don't leave.
People here don't leave, and people here are very tradition bound.
Mm-hmm.
Very.
So
yeah,
it's not in our lifetime. It won't happen.
And it's actually it actually came out worse this weekend. The whole Fighting Sioux chance, and
well, I think people actually came out to the game because it's the first time in a while. It's like this was a legit, like, we hear sellout all the time, and then we see like in the upper section, like the upper sections,
it's
they're still
empty. Yeah,
they're still empty, and then you look at them, they're probably down in the bar area because you get a better view of it.
Sure.
In the open end
zone.
But
this
bars.
One, there were like, what, 3-4 empty seats? And
Maybe. Yeah. And like, it was a great turn. I mean, it was over capacity.
Yeah.
Each night.
It was extremely crowded.
Very crowded. And I mean, it doesn't help that the concourse in the upper level is small as hell, too. Like, it's narrow as hell. It's not as big as the main concourse. But.
And that's where the student section is, which makes it worse.
Yeah. Well, student section's in both. Like, they have an upper double, too.
Yeah.
We can get into some college rivalries before we get to some other. Let's finish up the NHL rivalries.
Sure.
Because one of mine is the Penguins and the Capitals.
Yeah.
In that, you know. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to figure out when it started. I guess it was the playoff, the unsuccessful playoffs for the Capitals.
Because
it's not technically geographical, because it's 4 hours away from each other.
No. This one's definitely a playoff based. And I think it's. The part of it is the fact that Pittsburgh has the stars that the Caps never had. And I think that was part of the early part
of
it.
Or never had the opportunity to get.
Never had the money to get, never had the appeal to get, whatever. And then, of course, now you have the whole Ovi versus Sid thing, and that flared it even further.
Well, on a national scale, I think it became a thing because... Yeah. For you, like, my dad hated going to Penguins games with me because he's like, there's more Penguins fans here because they bust them in. And it's like, well, you know, I don't know what to tell you, Dad. People are trying to make money off their tickets. So.
Yeah. And plus, who wants to go see their team get beat 10-2?
Right.
I mean,
exactly. Well, they're better in that time. Tom Beaupre was good.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, you know. Bless you.
Another Penguin rivalry is Philadelphia, Pittsburgh. That's state rivalry.
Yeah.
Obviously. And that's also playoff rivalry,
too. That's
like
Grand Forks, Fargo. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. You want to put it that way. There's not two good teams in either. Like, they destroy them in basketball and volleyball and all that crap, too. So.
Yeah.
Trying to think. Like, the Devils kind of have a rivalry with the Rangers.
Kind of.
Like, it was better in the early 90s. Because both teams were quality.
Well, you had, they were both quality, and you had the dueling goalies. There we go.
Oh yeah, with
Richter
Brodeur,
and Brodeur, and
then Lundqvist and Brodeur.
Yeah.
And then Brodeur and somebody else. Like, it was the one constant was Marty Brodeur. Let's be honest here, kids. So there's that. The LA rivalries.
Yeah.
Your Sharks or your Kings and Ducks.
Those are pretty tame, though. I mean, compared to the rest.
Yeah.
Those are really tame.
Relatively tame. I mean, when you look at the... Because we talked about corporate rivalries these days. I mean, you look at the Toronto-Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rivalry, sure. Battle of Ontario, quote-unquote. But it's...
As somebody said in a headline lately, it was Battle of Ontario is the Battle of Ontarible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Neither team has been good. Neither team is as great as they were, and they're great at different times.
Yep.
And in the end, it's hard to have... It's like the Caps and Penguins. It's hard to have a rivalry when one team wins all the time.
Well, a lot of these rivalries have a pinpoint, where you can sort of pinpoint where they began. You know, Claude Lemieux. Bam. That's where the whole thing really came into focus for the Red Wings and the Avalanche. With Chris Draper, you know, Claude Lemieux, bam, there's your flashpoint. With the Islanders and the Rangers, it's the Potvin thing. With Quebec, it's just Quebec being Quebec.
It's the political.
You know? It's the political. It's there before you even start, you know. I mean, they all have some sort of pinpoint.
Sure.
You know, like with the Red Wings and Toronto, the reason for the rivalry there was, you know, they nearly accidentally killed Gordie Howe.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's a very clear, like, thing that you can point to for most of these. But in these corporate rivalries, they sort of advertise you into...
They could coerce you into it.
Yeah. They basically, like, advertise brainwash you into it.
Sure, so. Like these Rivalry Night Wednesdays are, god, terrible.
Yeah, or like the ads with Cam Neely and was it Mike Richter showing up at a family dinner, like a Thanksgiving family dinner.
Oh, that was for the, like, yeah, it was for the promoting the Thanksgiving game.
Yeah, and they were trying to make that like some sort of like Boston Rangers rivalry.
Yeah, well, I don't think either of them faced off against each other more than five times.
Yeah.
Because Neely was always hurt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but, I mean, it's kind of... God, terrible what the rivalries have become these days. I mean...
They don't have the intensity that they used
but can
to.
Can you blame it with a team of a league of 31 teams? Like, you can't have... Because people hate divisional matchups, but then they love divisional matchups in the playoffs, and then they hate it. And yeah. It's just like, you can't appease everybody.
Well, you know, back in the original 6 days, you played each other constantly. Mm-hmm. You know? I mean, you couldn't get away from each other. So,
sure.
Of course you're going to hate each other. And you're going to know each other's habits, and you're going to know each other's little quirks, and you're going to know each other. So, of course, you're going to find ways to annoy the other guys and fight and, you know, get into trouble. And even after the 67 expansion, you still had a lot of that left over because a lot of those guys hadn't retired, you know, from the original six until the last original six player was, I'm trying to remember. But anyway, the last one didn't retire until... like the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you had a whole decade there of carryover from the old days.
Was it Gordy?
Yeah, it was probably Gordy.
Yeah, because he retired in 80.
80.
Yeah, after the first year of
After
Harvard.
The first year of Wheeler. So, yeah. So, you have this whole decade of carryover. Mm-hmm. Plus, you have the WHA. Not,
sure, and that
know,
was a rivalry unto itself.
In,
that was
in and
a
of itself,
player,
yeah.
Player rivalry and contract rivalry.
Yeah, so.
So I'm trying to think of some minor league rivalries. I mean, obviously, it's organizational, that mm-hmm. too. Hershey, Wilkes-Barre, Scranton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's going to be a rivalry. For a time, Philly and Hershey, those were a bit, that was a big rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And then Philly moved to Adirondack and then Lehigh Valley. After they're like, ah, we can't have so many Philly teams here playing at one time. We don't have enough time for the Sixers. Trust the process.
No one has time for the Sixers. No. Well, they're getting better, aren't they?
Yeah, it's relative. I mean, Belleville and Laval started off pretty hot. But yeah, I mean, teams move around so damn much.
It's hard.
I mean, Rochester and Hershey traditionally would be the rivalry because they're the two longest standing teams out there. Mm. But... because it's Sabres prospects and Caps prospects.
Yeah.
You don't have that kind of that cachet, as it were.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be that when you signed your contract, like if you signed your contract with the Flyers and you grew up a Rangers fan, they would say, don't worry, you'll learn to hate the Rangers just as much as the rest of us. You know, like when you come into the organization, they basically informed you who to hate.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, like,
and
here's
this is even into like the early 90s. Like, they'd be like, here's your contract, and now you're gonna hate the Rangers and
sure.
Leafs
and it's kind of always weird when a guy from one team signs with another. Like the whole Jágr thing. I couldn't cheer for Jágr. I couldn't cheer for the Caps. You can't sign a guy who murder you in the playoffs, and then expect me to flip a switch and like him. No, the hell with him.
Yeah, that was Leonsis has said in interviews that is his like number one regret with not meddling in the team, but
just not giving it all.
Like not getting what he was getting in, like
not
making that
it.
Move, mm-hmm. not fully understanding what he was getting into.
Yeah.
So he knows he's owned up to that one.
Cool. That's great. Still, fuck him. I'm tired of him. I want him to retire. He's worthless. He's worthless to me. In general, he is worthless to me. All he creates is this garbage story after garbage story. This is older than this. We get it, you hacks. Leave it alone. Christ on a bike. Anyway. Like, it's 1A with him and Tiikkanen. Like, my hatred list.
I know. And Jágr's one of my favorites. So, were on direct opposites.
God awful. God awful. And I have to get a jersey because he's the last surviving NHL 94 player, which I'm fine with, but god awful. College rivalries are the rivalries that we came through this past weekend. Yeah. And that one, as one that, that's a pride thing because alma mater and all this other stuff. Yeah. Like it's almost funny. Like I watch college football pregame and you always know the people who love that, you know, the guy who is all about his alma mater because they're in the khaki shorts, the polo shirt and the visor. Yeah. Like that is the, That's a guy who donates. he is a donator.
That is
to
the guy
school.
Behind like three scholarships alone.
Exactly.
You know?
Like he's got a, his family has a building named after him. It's great.
Yeah.
Oh my god. But anyway. So one of the big things is obviously, and this is also another pride thing, but it's also interstate thing, like Michigan State.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge thing. It's been played at the Big House a couple times.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, wasn't that the outdoor game?
I think they had two of them.
Two of them, yeah.
Yeah. 2010 was the latest one, and before that,
and they actually set, like, some sort of college hockey attendance record.
They had
that.
They had the record all time.
Yeah.
It was, like, 16,000 or some shunk like that.
Yeah.
Rivalry at the Joe, where they had the... They had, you know, they met, it's Joe Louis Arena, and they're so close together, like the locker rooms bypass each other, so they had to have a little bit more security there.
Yeah.
That was a big thing. A lot of the Northeastern teams, you know, don't get a lot of play, except for unless you're Boston school, BCBU, separated by 4 miles of their campus, this is the Green Line rivalry.
Yeah.
Always meet in the bean pot together against each other for some reason, because Northeastern and Harvard are garbage most of the time.
UND and BU have had a rivalry.
A little bit
it's
of
been
one.
On and off, but yeah.
274 meetings between BU and BC.
Yeah.
BU leads 133 to 123 to 18, so it's close. Only 10 games over 500. Cornell and Harvard is a huge one.
Yeah, I think Ken Dryden's even talked about that.
Yeah. It's a giant one, 146 matchup, started in 1910.
Yep. Club teams,
yeah, but they still face off against each other. Fish is a big thing. The Cornell fans will throw fish on the ice as the Harvard fans enter the ice in their home arena.
Oh.
So it doesn't matter how this fish flying as the as it happens. I'm like, well,
isn't there a team that throws ping pong balls or tennis balls?
I think that was like at the rut. That could be overseas.
No, I thought that was a college, like a Northeastern college team, like maybe tier two.
Could be.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, the gopher thing is that's a long-standing thing though, throwing the gophers.
Yeah. The fish throwing thing happened at after a Harvard fan threw a dead chicken at one of the Cornell goalies. And then they tied a live chicken to a goalpost, which is interesting.
College hockey is full of so many weird stories.
But can you figure out the one that's played the most games?
The rivalry,
the college rivalry that's played the most games. Because I was shocked at this one too.
Dartmouth.
Could it be Dartmouth? Hold on, Dartmouth, New Hampshire. I didn't even know that one. I just the longest running one that I saw was another one. Let me see. Dartmouth, New Hampshire. Because
Dartmouth had a club team way back when. So did Princeton.
Right. So it was
my guess
67 in hockey.
Okay.
So, oh, no, that's basketball. Where's ice hockey? Oh, it's only been 30 in ice hockey, and that's been since 70. It's not the battle for Pike Peak either between Air Force and Colorado College, but Colorado College is in this.
Okay.
It's the battle for the Golden Pan.
Is that Colorado College and, not DU.
It's DU, Denver.
Oh, is it DU?
Yep. University of Denver.
I was thinking, was it Northern? No. I'm terrible with my Colorado schools. I'll admit that.
That's fine.
I'm basically learning college hockey as I cover it.
Yeah, pretty. So. That's welcome to my world too. 308 matchups together, and that's only since 1950. So that's a, considering, you know, Harvard and Cornell face off against each other since 1910.
Yeah. Life magazine back in the 50s actually did a whole set of a photo spread on the Colorado rivalry and fans attending the games.
Yeah, so it looks like they play 4 times a year.
Wow.
So that's pretty huge.
Yeah.
Denver has won the last 13 of them. And one of them was at Coors Field during the outdoor game in 2016. The Dartmouth one there is there. Also, the Harvard-Yale is a obviously Harvard-Yale in itself is a rivalry, but the hockey rivalry not as big. 252 matchups there. The Holy War on Ice, though, one of a newer generation. Boston College against Notre Dame, 2 Catholic schools.
Sure.
So, quite the interesting happening there. What the hell was that? So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of college rivalries out there. I'm sure we missed some. If we did, go ahead and check us out at SDR Strong Bubble, and give us some ideas on all of that, because we like to hear from all of that.
Yeah, it's nice to have different perspectives or someone who's lived through one of these rivalries. So, yeah. So throwing things on ice.
So I'm gonna get to. So I was leaving a pause.
Oh.
So, here we are now.
Okay.
Throwing things on ice. So we saw dead gophers on ice. Yes. We talked about fish being thrown on ice.
Yeah.
And a bunch of number of other things being thrown on ice.
Ah, yes.
But did it start with hats, or did it start with something else?
I want to say the octopus came before the hats, but I could be wrong. Because the octopus was the mid-50s.
I'm trying to find
early 50s.
The lineage of
the hat lineage you're never gonna find, because there's 3 different stories as to where that started. But throwing things on ice is not a new thing by any stretch of the imagination. Back in the 20s, and if you go digging around the internet like I do, you find pictures of fans coming up off the subway in like Chicago and Boston. There are police and ushers at the entrances to like Chicago Stadium and Boston Garden, and they are confiscating like rolls of toilet paper and bottles and, you know, things wrapped in newspaper.
It's like teenagers at Halloween.
Basically, but I mean, they're taking these off of like grown men, you know?
Yeah. Try to live their glory.
Yeah. During the Richard riot, the game that was played that set off the Richard riot, there were smoke bombs. There were attempted like tear gas type bombs. The people have been throwing stuff on the ice forever. One of the stories I kind of enjoyed is men back in the day used to wear these rubber overshoes to protect their regular shoes. So when they're out in the mud and the slush and whatever, they had these rubber overshoes that they just slipped on over their regular brogues or Oxfords or whatever. And they would actually throw their overshoes onto the ice at games. And there were a couple of players whose dads would pull them aside and be like, listen, tonight when you play, and the kid's like, yeah, yeah, I know, do my best, score a goal, blah, blah. And the dad's like, no, I'm a size 10. If you see a pair on the ice, snag them for me. Like, you know, I mean, that's how epidemic it was. Mm-hmm. People threw coins. Oh, here's a story I told in my first sporting news article. I didn't tell it in the article, actually, but I did tweet about it while I was writing the article. There was a player who had too many fines. He had $35 worth of fines. And so they weren't going to let him play. This is back in the first season, so 1917-18. And he showed up pregame because he was suspended because he hadn't paid his fines. So $35 worth of fines. So he shows up with $30 and like $400 coins, like pennies, in a bag. And they accepted the paper money, but they would not accept the pennies in the bag. So he got mad and threw it on the ice during the pregame. And one of the players smacked the bag, just came up and pow, and there were pennies all over the ice, and they had to delay the game while they cleaned up the ice. Gump Worsley got a concussion because he got hit in the head by an egg. So, like, somebody in the stands threw an egg and hit him in the head, and so he got a minor concussion. That was the news story. That's the literal headline. I have it on Hockey Time Machine, the Tumblr. So, I mean, there was a bag of peas, frozen peas, that got thrown onto the ice and then split open. So they had to go around picking up individual peas off the ice.
Peas are terrible. They're the worst.
The first time Erika Lindros played in Quebec, the fans were crazy. Like, they went up into the bathrooms and stole the rolls of toilet paper and got them wet and then threw them on the ice so that they would, like, smear all over the place and, like, hit you and, like, you know, like, and they threw bullets, like just bullets, like, in their casings that they had in their pockets for some reason.
Sure, no.
So they were throwing, really, like, literal bullets on the ice. They had $400 and some odd in change thrown on the ice. Pacifiers. They had $500 and some odd pacifiers
that
thrown
one,
on the ice.
That one, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, anything you could really think of, they were there to throw. Nashville, you have the catfish. Alberta, you have the beef.
No, that's not as prevalent now, though.
No.
Beef's expensive, for Christ's sake. The LA, great.
LA, you had the dude throwing his chicken, his pet chicken.
That was a one-off, though.
Yeah, that was a strange one. But
the rats in Florida.
The rats in Florida, yeah.
The rat trick action.
The octopus.
Octopus, yeah. So I have a hat trick thing here.
Uh-huh.
So, obviously different claims.
Yes.
But it wasn't essentially, you know, the reason why it was popularized. It's because of haberdashers.
Mm-hmm.
Or kids like to call them hat makers nowadays.
Yes.
So, according to the NHL, in 1940, Toronto haberdasher, fun word to say, used to give free hats to the players of Toronto Maple Leafs who scored 3 goals in a game and introduced the expression hat trick into the world of hockey. Montreal Hatter Henri.
Mm-hmm.
Similar claim between 1950 and 70, there were NHL players who scored 3 or more goals at Montreal former free hats. The Guelph Bitmore Mad Hatters did the same thing. They were an AHL affiliate or minor league affiliate. I think a junior sponsor team.
Yeah, basically.
Sponsor would give away Mad Hatters player and he scored 3 or a new fedora for any 3 goals that he scored. Mm-hmm. And then you go back to January 26, 1948, when they talk about Alex Coletta getting his enter the shop of Toronto businessman to purchase a hat, didn't have enough money. The guy who owned the place
made the bet with him.
Yeah. And got the free hat that way.
Yeah.
But then you look back in wartime, December 9, 1933, Winnipeg Free Press has someone completing a hat trick.
Yep.
And then, like, in 30, you know, before that in Lethbridge. So
yeah, it's one of those things you can argue. Like, where did this really start? Where did this really come from? Because there was a guy in Chicago who did the same thing and offered. I mean, there are pictures of players going in and picking out hats. You know, it was good promotion for them. But the actual act of throwing your hats on the ice, that came a lot later.
Yeah.
When hats were more disposable. Like, when you had more trucker hats, baseball caps.
Sure, like in the 70s.
Yeah, 70s, 80s. That's when it became more of a thing. And then, of course, you have the people throwing bras on the ice.
Yeah. Bras.
That was the most hilarious thing. I was in Philly at the Spectrum. This is how far back my internship was. I was there to do my internship interviews. And on the concourse, they have these plexiglass display cases of hat tricks in Flyers history. And they had gathered up sampling of the hats and put them on like 3 or 4 different shelves and packed the shelves full. And then it had a little plaque next to it. You know, this was Erik Lindros's blah, blah, blah hat trick and whatever. So I'm kind of wandering around the concourse because I knew the building was going to be torn down and I didn't know if I was getting the internship. And I thought, well, this is my one chance. So I'm going to like sneak around the building a little bit. And luckily I didn't get caught, but I'm walking around and one of the hat tricks, there's all these hats and then stuffed in like mid-eye level, slightly to the side, is this like white lacy bra. And this is from the 90s. So throwing your bra on the ice is not a new thing either, ladies.
No, it's been there.
It's been
It has happened.
Yeah.
Don't think you're revolutionary. It's all right.
But I was just kind of surprised to see this broad trapped in there with all these hats.
I'm sure it's kind of just a shock to the system at that point. It's like,
Yeah, because the NHL prides itself on being so family friendly in the arenas and whatever. So that's, you know, I guess you wouldn't expect to see a piece of lingerie on display like that. No, I mean, it's not like highlighted or anything. It's just stuffed in there with everything else. You're like, is that? You back up. It is. Okay.
How about that? Good work. Anything else that stands out to you in terms of stuff being thrown?
Not really. They used to, during games in, I think, Quebec and Ottawa, they used to lock up the toilet paper. So, because of the throwing and because they would wet it and then throw it. Or they would just steal it and throw it. And so they started dyeing it, like, pink or, like some non-great color, like pale green or, you know, something. And then it still didn't help a whole lot.
No, probably didn't. Get it. We'll change the color. That'll just... Yeah. Nope.
Yeah. People have thrown cups of beer on the ice, like full glasses of beer on the ice. Waffles?
Ah, yes, the waffles.
We forgot the waffles. Yeah. The guy who threw his jersey on the ice. Mm. He got so mad at the Leafs being terrible, he threw his jersey on the ice.
Yeah, that's just a lot of fan frustration at that point.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think probably the oddest thing, though, is just, like, the random bullet and shotgun shells.
Kind of creepy.
Like, why are you carrying these in your pocket in the first place?
Yeah.
Now, if you're a farmer, I can sort of understand.
Sure.
But if you're from the city.
You're just a city guy, then.
Then what are you doing?
Cops should be a little more after you. All right. Our newest bit, hockey stories from 1990s or beyond or before or whatever. So we have these Score 1990 packs, Premier Edition. Got to figure out what we're going to do with these. Because we have the complete set sitting over there in the box, so.
I'm willing to bet we have listeners who need cards to complete their sets.
Okay, well, if you need 1990 scores, give us a holler, or maybe you can just write up like a little piece of paper, like of a history thing, and you just put the card with it and you send it to people.
Yeah.
Give us at SDR Strong Bubble on Twitter. Give us your ideas what we should do with these hockey cards.
Yeah.
All right, first, Alan Bester.
Little Alan Bester, who's seen more rubber than the Trans-Canada Highway.
That's a good line.
That was Don Cherry.
Yeah, he was a good little goalie. Yeah. Always weird, like the brown pads, but he had the colored blocker and stuff like that. Peter Zezel.
I have some people in my Twitter feed who are huge fans of his. He played semi-pro soccer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's
quite good.
Interesting.
Yeah, he died of cancer.
Yeah. Scott Young, Hartford Whalers. Mm. Nothing?
Nah.
How about this guy? Beauty, Jaromir Jagr, first round overall draft card.
The worst possible picture.
Oh, I don't know. Marty Brodeur's is pretty bad.
Marty Brodeur looks like young Big Boss Man to me.
Does.
With that weird blonde 80s stash and the flat top. And
it's funny. I was just ripping him earlier, Jaromir Jagr.
Yeah. When he first came over here, he thought everyone was yelling at him. So he wanted to go home. And when he arrived at Penguins camp, he's like, everyone here is huge. And there's no way I'm going to make the team. And I want to go home.
Yelling at him how? Just because of his...
Because of the language barrier. Because they would say something to him and he didn't get it. So they'd say it again.
And they say it louder.
And they say it louder and slower because that's what Americans do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he thought everyone was mad at him. And he played with an illegal blade, right? So to get the point across that he couldn't do that in games, the coach took and snapped his sticks in half. And again, he thought that they were telling him he was a bad player.
At what point did they realize? I understand the Penguins at that point.
Well, they tried to put him in language courses, right? Like they put him in a 6-week English immersion course, but they didn't realize that, you know, 6 hours a day or 7 hours a day of sitting and listening to someone in English only try to communicate to a classroom full of like Russians and Czechs and you know, Spanish speakers and whatever is not necessarily the best thing to do. And so eventually they got a guy on the team who spoke Czech and that helped a lot.
Why wouldn't you do that beforehand? Like, so they kind of did with Ovechkin. I mean, they cut
well,
a couple guys.
It was a
them.
Learning curve at that point though.
I suppose. Mark Bureau. Calgary Flames. Nothing?
No.
No. I always remember, Tampa Bay Lightning.
I always remember thinking there was something wrong with his, like, the spell. Like, the first time I saw his name, I thought it was, like, a misspelling or something. So I was like, Mark Furniture?
Turner Stevenson.
Oh, I had a Turner Stevenson story, and I can't remember.
Just blanking.
Yeah.
Sean Antoski.
Sean Antoski.
Look at that flat top. That's a beauty.
Yeah, he was kind of a goof.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah, he played a lot of pranks. That was one of his things.
Jan Eriksson.
Which Eriksson? Jan Eriksson. There were like four of them. Oh, with the X, yes. I'm sure I have a story about him, but not off the top of my head.
Troy Millett.
One of the original Ducks?
One. I don't know if he was one of the original Ducks. I know Troy Loney was an original Duck.
Troy Loney, that's, yeah.
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 Nothing? All right. Trent Yanni.
Trent Yanni. I have stories about all these guys, but not off the top of my head.
Mm. Mark Lamb.
Fighter.
Denny Savard. You got to have a good one about Denny Savard off the top of your head.
Yeah, he didn't know how to wear his helmet properly. He'd turn his head and his helmet would stay in place.
Jesus.
They had to help him out, be like, dude, no, stop.
And this was in the NHL.
This was in the NHL.
Front row, Joel Otto.
Joel Otto. Oh, Joel Otto. It's my housemate's in Philly. This is his wife's favorite player. He was one of those guys that ripped it up in the minor leagues.
And just kind of... The role didn't progress to him in the NHL.
Yeah, they had a slightly different vision for him in the NHL.
Sure.
Yeah.
Igor Larionov.
The professor. Only ate, I think it was either chicken or fish on game days. Hmm. He believes in a glass of wine as a digestive. He's like basically semi-vegetarian.
Right.
He speaks four languages.
And one of the first to come over in the, without, like, on the loan.
The Perestroika?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So. He's in the Red Army documentary.
Which I have on DVD. We still have to watch.
Yeah.
Tugger. Ronnie Tugnutt. Finish us out.
Oh. Yeah, one of those goalies who's always in the right place, wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
So. The Tugnutt for president.
Oh, Columbus in 2000 when they did that.
The weird ad where he's like delivering the baby.
Yeah. Very bizarre with his picture, man. I'm like, that can't be sanitary. Like, as I work in a hospital, I'm like, that's not sterile.
Yeah.
Especially goalie gloves. Those things are hideous.
And they had there was a series of ads, and I don't think any of them are on YouTube, unfortunately. I may have to talk to Columbus's media people and just be like,
well, if they can get out of their own, I was going to say, you can't talk to their social media people because they can't get out of their own ass enough to have you reply.
Well, one of them did. Mm. But yeah, I should see if they have any of those old ads. I was really disappointed. I was talking to a guy from the Falcons, well, when they were the Falcons, before they were, and by Falcons I mean the AHL Falcons, who used to be the Springfield Indians, and they used to have a segment during their intermission, which was basically Eddie Shore would come on and they would interview him about this, that, and the other thing. And they did this for like years. And so I contacted them and I said, do you have any of these interviews? And he said, no, we threw everything out when we moved. Like, we threw everything out. And I just like wanted to cry. Like, no, this is no. And so people ask me, why should my team have a historian? I'm like, so this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know,
people don't understand the valuation of it.
No, it's like the Caps.
Mm-hmm.
All of their early years are gone. Like on video, on radio, like all of the recordings that they themselves would have had are gone. They all got taped over or thrown away. So any clips that you see of the Caps from the early 70s to like 82, 83-ish are most likely from the rival city. or from like the
like
NHL.
Newsreel or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, basically. Because they just didn't see any value to it. So they taped over everything. And then once the tapes were shot, they threw them out. Because you know how tapes get like weird and stretched out, whatever. Yeah. Like, so, you know, once you've recorded over it, you know, X number of times, it's thrown out. So unless there's somebody in the greater DC area who has a storage locker full of old Caps games tapes.
Good luck.
You know.
Because that's also in a time when games weren't readily on TV and VCRs weren't.
Right, right. And so unless you had somebody who was recording the games on, you know, on the radio.
Even then, like,
yeah.
Why would you?
Yeah. So when people ask me, you know, why should my team have a historian? These are the sort of reasons I give. Because if you don't have the footage of those founding years, you don't have the information about those founding years, it's really hard to build an accurate team history. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to get those alumni involved because it's like, well, we'd love to do a highlight reel and, you know, do honor you during this ceremony, but
yeah, we have
we're going to replace it with an interview with Labre and Beaupre and
sure, like all the guys you know? Who are still around town.
Yeah, yeah. But we're just gonna have a bunch of old Caps saying great things about you instead, you know.
Yeah, there's the rub, right?
Yeah.
Oh well. All right, well I think we've done it.
Yeah.
We're off UND hockey for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll have no updates on that except for what we see from their Twitter and whatnot.
Yeah. A couple people sad last night that Middlestad wasn't playing. But you got to realize he took a nice thump to the head the night before, so.
Yep, precautionary. So he's still a freshman. He's got a couple years left.
Other one fan was like, please tell me he's off signing his contract right now. I'm like, sorry, just saw him buying a Little Caesar's pizza.
And he just got a big slice of pizza. I don't know what to tell you. Maybe got some crazy bread with it, too.
That slice of pizza was like the size of my head. Yeah.
They don't mince anything there. The Ralph or Little Caesars, that's for damn sure.
No.
All right, where can they find you?
NHL History Girl.
You did a thing with the Russian Machine Never Breaks guys for their podcast.
I did, and it was this last Friday, so.
The 19th?
20th? 20th, yeah. Yeah, they put it up on the 20th. So
October 20th edition.
Yep.
So you can check that out. Are you doing the donation thing still? What's up with that?
There's going to be a new one. Friday was sort of a rough day for me, so I had to unfortunately postpone the last day of the Caps prize. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be Monday. So Monday afternoon is going to be the final day of Caps trivia. Mm-hmm. And we're going to announce the next round of donation raising.
Going into November.
Yes,
sure.
Yes. And this time there's a twist, though.
What's a twist?
The twist is the Caps fans can donate and they can vote. They can't vote for the Caps.
So the Caps are off the board.
The Caps are off the board. So they can be like the anti. So they can like anti vote. So if the Pens are ahead, they can vote for anybody but the Pens, you know.
So like a wild card situation.
Basically, they can storm in with their votes and tip the boat one way or the other.
There you go. Make sure you pin that too when you actually release it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this last one was not well planned because it was like spur of the moment. Sure. So learning experience.
Well, yeah. Now you got it ends on Monday, so you have like a week and a day to figure out a new one to start November off.
Yes, and I'm thinking November's is going to be about warmth.
Okay.
So donating coats, money for shelters.
Sure.
You know. That sort of thing.
Shelter,
so
just yeah.
Yeah, the theme this month is warmth.
Give me shelter.
Yeah, give me shelter, basically. So yeah.
Have a attach the Rolling Stones thing to it. You're good to go.
Yeah.
Cool. That's good. It's good you're doing good things.
I'm trying.
I will be raising money for myself. I will not be having a trivia contest. I'm just going to start GoFundMe, and you can donate there.
Yeah.
It's not for much my warmth as it is.
We're trying to work out a Patreon.
Yeah,
something.
The whole Face Off Hockey Show media faction is trying to. There are some people to this who don't see. Like, well, we're not as big as you know. What are we going to do with this? Like, well, you get some money.
Use it for travel.
Exactly. It's like we put the like. I don't expect us to get puck soup numbers. I don't expect us to get Wyshynski numbers.
No.
I'm better than him, but I don't expect to get Wyshynski numbers. Been at this game longer than he has. But I mean, it's just for trips. It's for stuff to pay off website cost. It's for
new microphones,
upgraded equipment so we sound better.
Yeah.
Especially for Mark, because his microphone's god terrible. If we can raise some money to get him a new microphone, Christ on a bike. Like, these things cost $50. If we get 10 people to sign up for $5, that gets Mark a new microphone. Christ. So we don't have to tell him, hey, flip your damn switch, you idiot. Oh, Lord of mercy. But we might be starting that up, so that'll probably be starting in November, so pay attention to Face-Off Hockey Show on Facebook, FOHS Radio, on Twitter, Face-Off HGKY Show, Side of Strum Bubble, SDR Strum Bubble, Jen at NHL History Girl, me at Scotty Waz. That's it, that's all. We've done it.
Yeah.
All right, for Jen, I'm Scott. Take care of yourself and someone else. This has been the Side of Strum Bubble on the Face-Off Hockey Show Media Faction via Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time through. Bye.